I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters. Today, we're looking at the ski industry, its importance to our region as an economic driver, as well as the many changes it's facing right now. Today, companies are using technology to make bombing down a cold mountain faster, more fun, and a lot more comfortable. And that's changing what used to be a pretty basic sport. Our Mountain West News Bureau, Nate Hedgie, reports on what's gained and what's lost with all this new tech.
We're in a bustling ski factory west of the snowy Wasatch Mountains in Utah. Many of the workers here look like ski bums. We're talking beanies, beards, flannels, but they're hard at work crafting some of the most advanced skis in the world. I watch as wood and carbon fiber are smooshed together in a giant red hot box.
Okay, so this is like the panini press for your ski sandwiches.
It is, yeah. I recommend not eating these, but yes.
That last voice belongs to Alex Hunt. He's the communications manager here at DPS Skis, and he says carbon fiber skis are a fairly new trend. It's the same stuff companies use to make modern hockey sticks or racing bikes out of. It's flexible, durable, and really lightweight.
If it's lighter, the skier is going to use less energy, and then therefore can take more runs because they're not so tired and just have a better day.
But they're also expensive. We're talking more than $1,000. Hunt compares these high-end skis to purchasing a new car.
You know, a Cadillac per se, versus kind of a low end kind of entry, Chevy or Pontiac or whatever's out there these days.
And just like new cars, skiing is getting more and more high tech. For instance, there are goggles that show your text messages as they come in. Wearable tech that you can put in your boots to tell you if you're edging correctly. For novices out there, edging means how good or bad your technique is. And of course, for a while, you've been able to buy USB rechargeable heated gloves, boots, and jackets. Hunt says it all makes sense.
Going outside in the middle of winter for most people is not a pleasurable experience. So, you know, by having, you know, the best equipment, you know, having warm gloves, having, you know, good goggles so you have strong vision, you know, reduces all those negative things that come to mind when a lot of people think about, you know, going outside in a blizzard.
But being in a blizzard, bombing down a hill, wearing jeans and a cheap pair of gloves, that's how a lot of people out west used to ski. James Lynch is the outdoor gear editor for Popular Mechanics. And don't get him wrong, he loves a lot of this high-tech stuff. But Lynch also feels it kind of takes away from the struggle.
You know, the aspect of going outside into the outdoors and it not being comfortable.
In the olden days, he says, mountaineers and skiers, they look tough as nails.
You lose a little bit of that break the West kind of vibe that for a lot of time has been part of the outdoor adventure. The, you know, pushing yourself and seeing what you're capable of and having fun in that struggle.
But some people don't want to freeze their butts off on a mountain, or they want to go as fast as humanly possible down one, and they're willing to spend the money to do so. One market analyst group expects the ski equipment industry will be worth more than $5 billion by 2020. There's new products coming out constantly. Back at the ski factory, Alex Hunt shows off one of his company's newest inventions. It's called Phantom, and it looks like, well, clear goop.
I guess we could maybe compare it to the feel that you would get from like a vegetable oil.
Phantom costs around $100, but rub some on your skis, put them into a tanning bed, one for skis, not people, and you'll never have to buy wax again. Those skis, Hunt says, will go fast season after season. I ask him why people would spend that much money on stuff like this.
I think in general, there has been kind of a trend towards, I guess, more enjoyment and fulfillment in people's lives.
Nowadays, some people just want to have a little extra fun with their money.
And if that means, you know, spending some of that money on, you know, on more or less like toys.
Well, then that's good for Hunt's business and good for the ski hill. And talking about the ski hill, you might not even need one in the future. There are now virtual reality ski simulators in Los Angeles in Germany. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Nate Hedgie in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Today, we're talking about one of the most important contributors to our region's economy, the ski industry. It's dealing with some pretty big changes right now, probably the biggest one, climate. Winters are getting shorter, and mountain resorts are having to adapt. Allie Budner reports.
On a hot day back in September, I visited Arapahoe Basin ski area, just 80 miles west of Denver.
We got Dad and kiddo over here playing Frisbee.
The resort's Mike Nathan is giving me a tour. As we walk, Nathan points to a couple of kids running through a sprinkler.
I guarantee you that's a first for A-Basin. Kids shirtless playing in water in September at almost 11,000 feet.
Oh, and that German music in the background?
Today's our first ever Oktoberfest here at A-Basin.
Nathan says it's been a summer of firsts for this small ski area.
It's the first summer that we've had true, like, events every weekend.
He says they've drawn more people up this summer for hiking, mountain biking, and wildlife viewing. On the day I visited, the gold-leafed aspens were an attraction, in addition to the Biersteins and Strudel, of course. Nathan says this summer expansion was a natural way of growing their business and bolstering their annual income, using infrastructure they already had.
We think we've got such a cool place here that we really want to try to encourage people to use it all year round.
But the move is also related to shrinking winters. A recent report funded by the Environmental Protection Agency said if our current warming trend stays on course, nearly all ski areas in the country will see their winter recreation season shorten by a lot, 50% by 2050 and a whopping 80% by 2090. That's a problem for the ski industry. Tori Udall is with the Boulder-based nonprofit advocacy group Protect Our Winters.
Really, snow equals money, and more of it is more money, and less of it is less money.
According to the Outdoor Industry Association, snow sports contribute over $17 billion and more than 170,000 jobs to the economy. And that's in our region alone. Earlier this year, Udall's group published its own economic report.
During low snowfall years, the average number of jobs lost across the country is over 17,000, and the average revenue loss is just over $1 billion.
Of course, weather and snow seasons can vary quite a bit. In response to a question on preparing for climate change, a representative from Vail Resorts said they're not too worried. They're having a really good snow year. And that's true. Chris Linsmeyer is with Colorado Ski Country USA, an industry group that represents 23 ski areas in Colorado.
This year, we've had plentiful early season snowfall.
But, he says, it's important to note that over the long term, the mountains have been seeing more frost-free days.
Which has a huge impact on our industry, especially in the early season as resorts are utilizing man-made snow and working to get the resorts open. That's certainly a trend that we've seen.
And it's a trend the ski industry can't ignore.
Climate change is certainly something that our resorts are seeing affecting their business and are taking seriously and trying to come up with solutions to it.
Small resorts like Arapahoe Basin and big ones like Aspen.
We actually debuted our newest summer activity center up on Snowmass this summer. It's called Lost Forest.
That's Christian Knapp with the Aspen Skiing Company.
And we've got several cool activities built into the forest up there for families to enjoy. There's an alpine coaster up there. We've got a giant rock climbing wall. And we've really continued to build out our mountain bike downhill program as well.
But he says Aspen is also focusing on how to make and keep more snow on their slopes for the fall, winter, and spring.
We are investing in more snowmaking, coverage, pipelines, holding ponds, more brushing on the mountains so you can open with less snow, all those things. We want to be prepared going forward.
Back at Arapahoe Basin, Mike Nathan says they're preparing that way too. And he says while summer offerings aren't a silver bullet, it will definitely help their bottom line.
We've been very pleasantly surprised with the numbers we're getting. But to compare them to our winter visitation is apples and oranges, totally.
Their bread and butter, you could say, is still in the powder. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Allie Budner.
Today, we're talking about the ski industry, its importance to our region as an economic driver, as well as all of the changes that it's facing right now. Now we're going to look at how climate change is transforming ski resort leaders into activists and lobbyists. Another story from Allie Budner.
Earlier this year, Aspen Skiing Company launched an edgy ad campaign called Give a Flake. A music video shows action shots of skiers and snowboarders shredding up mountains while bright red letters in all caps flash across the screen, saying things like, if you love powder days, protect your passion, respect the mountain, join the movement. Christian Knapp is the head of marketing and sales for Aspen. He says they're trying to make people aware that climate change is affecting the industry. Then they're giving them tools to get involved.
There's a really cool Twitter widget where you can go in and put in your zip code and it will pull up your state senators and representatives.
The app shows the user how those politicians have voted when it comes to climate issues.
So you can see if they give a flake or if they don't. And then you can choose to generate a tweet at them.
And for the non-digitally inclined, Aspen printed ads in outdoor sports magazines that are actually postcards.
That you can tear out, sign, and drop in a post office box and send directly to three Republican senators who are really swing votes on climate.
Aspen is also working with the Boulder-based nonprofit advocacy group Protect Our Winters, or POW as it's known. A couple years ago, POW hauled a 1970s-era phone booth to the base of Aspen Mountain.
And had people calling their elected officials to urge them to protect the methane rule that was up for a vote in the Senate.
That's Tori Udall with POW.
Many of the people had never called an elected official on any issue, and especially not on climate.
Udall says offering people easy advocacy opportunities when they come to a ski resort is key to building a movement of people who care. And they're not stopping there. Recently, POW took Aspen's Mr. Knapp to Washington. Knapp spoke to us from inside the halls of Congress on what turned out to be a historic day. Kavanaugh was testifying in his bid to become a Supreme Court justice.
So it was a lot of buzz in the Capitol, a lot of energy here.
About 30 other members of the snow sports community were there too, from ski resort representatives and gear brand owners to Olympic athletes.
We had some great meetings with some of the senators and representatives and both sides of the aisle, talking to them about climate legislation that can help our future in the snow sports industry.
Going to D.C. isn't for everyone, though. Mike Nathan is the sustainability manager at Arapahoe Basin, or A-Basin as it's called. It's a small ski area 80 miles west of Denver. He's been active on more local environmental issues. Nathan says political activism is important, but
I don't think we'd feel very right about touting this climate action and advocacy if we weren't actually doing anything here. You know, you got to walk the walk, too.
Which is why more and more resorts are trying to green their own operations. At A-Basin, for example, Nathan oversees several energy-efficient buildings and a waste reduction program. He says it saves money, but it's also about setting an example.
If some guest that skied here on a Saturday goes home and puts a compost bucket under their sink, I'm super happy.
He says they do sometimes get pushback.
We'll have a Facebook post around some sustainability win or a new project or an event or something. And there's always like one person that's like, oh, pfft. Great. A-Basin's political now. I guess I won't come. And then like 100 people jump on their back. We don't even have to say anything. They come to our defense.
Christian Knapp with Aspen Skiing Company echoes this sentiment.
I think more and more, you know, certainly millennial generation like to align themselves with businesses and brands that speak to their personal values.
Values like environmental sustainability. He points to companies like Patagonia.
They're basically an activist company. More than ever, and their sales are at record-setting levels. Nike saw a 30% increase in their e-commerce sales the week after the Colin Kaepernick ad campaign broke.
In other words, he says, taking a stand politically on climate change can also help a ski company's bottom line.
We do hope it does have a halo effect on our brand.
They'll see just how much as the current ski season gets underway. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Allie Budner.
Today, we've been talking about the ski industry and its importance to our region's economy. There is no doubt it can be a very expensive sport, and there's a concern that mergers and acquisitions could make it even pricier. So is it increasingly a sport just for the wealthy? We visited a couple of different places, Bogus Basin for one. But first, Camilla Kadulski checked out Jackson Hole Mountain Resort in Wyoming.
The mountain draws visitors from all over the world. Lift tickets here average $140 a day, and staying at the village can cost anywhere from $300 to $2,000 a night. The village is pretty glitzy with boutique shops and upscale restaurants, but ask Jackson Hole's Anna Cole, and she'll tell you the mountain has built its reputation on serious skiing.
This mountain is unlike any others you'll ever experience.
Lots of steep and deep runs, she says. I decide to give it a try. Trey Sharp is my guide. As we ride up the Bridger Gondola, he tells me he grew up in Jackson Hole. This mountain isn't for the faint of heart.
You have exposed cliff bands, and you have some danger. It instills a bit more of the sense of adventure, or it keeps it fresh instead of someplace that's completely pampered.
Sharp takes me on the aerial tramway. We go up 4,000 vertical feet.
If you are considering going into the backcountry, please have all of your proper equipment, knowledge, partner, gear, plan. And if you don't know, don't go.
Sharp leads me to the legendary Corbett's Couloir Chute Run.
It's like dropping into, say, a half pipe. You know, it's vertical at the top and one very committing turn.
My stomach flips. Thankfully, it's closed, and we ski down another less scary black diamond. At the base, we head to a popular restaurant for an après-ski. We both opt for a $19 Twisted Reuben.
And you know that's made with salmon, right?
You do.
Perfect. I double-check. Some people miss that.
This is a feeling Jackson Hole says it wants you to have. Feeling accomplished after a full day of skiing and then on to enjoy the village with friends. I'm Camila Kadalska in Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
And I'm James Dawson in Bogus Basin, Idaho.
1, 2, 3. Ah! I'm freaking out!
No village, fancy restaurants, or 5-star hotels here. Most families drive in for the day. 8-year-old twins Scarlett and Vivian have been skiing at Bogus since they were toddlers.
I love all the jumps, the ends, there's in the secret caves and the passages.
The ski area is one of just a handful of nonprofits in the country. Its operating budget is about $8.3 million, and they get about 340,000 visitors in the winter, mostly locals. Scarlett and Vivian's parents had their first date there.
He was like the classic hot guy out of the 90s.
That classic hot guy here is Pat, and he's been skiing at Bogus since he was 6.
I remember driving up the road in the back of the station wagon, my mom driving and having to listen to my sister's music.
You know, the classics like Madonna, The Cure, maybe throwing a little Scorpions. He skied a lot of places, but the vibe there keeps him going back.
All my friends that I grew up with in the 80s and 90s that we grew up skiing together, we now have our kids, and our kids are getting up there. There's just such a tradition of the love of skiing.
Suzanne says she loves the Bogus vibe too, but the vibes at swanky resorts like Aspen, not so much.
Get out of the car and you're like, everybody's got mascara and the fancy outfit. And the thing about Bogus is like the most beautiful, you know, stylish women here will just be like, I woke up and put my beanie on and we're going to go have some fun. And I love that.
The next day, I meet the family at Bogus for lunch, sandwiches and fries served on olive green cafeteria trays. Pat's friend Jesse Weiss is joining us as well. He's been a ski instructor at Bogus and Jackson Hole and says they're completely different.
What they say about Jackson is the locals are better than the pros. So Jackson has a much more serious vibe. Here, it's about being rad and having fun.
And that's part of how Bogus Basin officials try to stand out. A day pass here is less than half the price of Jackson Hole and roughly a third of the price of a day pass at Vail. And the low prices and new summer programs may be working. From 2014 to 2017, attendance has nearly doubled. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm James Dawson.
We're talking about the ski industry today, its importance to our region as an economic driver, as well as all of the changes that's facing the industry. So now we're going to look at the changing world of the ski bum. Ski bumming is as much a term of endearment as it is an aspiration to live the mountain life. Decades of corporate mergers and tourism have turned Colorado's scrappy ski towns into high-end resorts, making it even harder for these low-wage workers to live that dream. We sent Derry Buscarin to the Crested Butte Ski Resort in Colorado.
This is the dream.
Scoot over.
Roll out of bed, pack up the car, and drive up a snow-covered road and into the backcountry. There are 5 of us, which is lucky because even a Chevy Silverado fishtails a bit on the high mountain roads. The road ends in a small clearing with a homemade terrain park off to the side.
This is the Lake Irwin Jib Park.
28-year-old Ben Hayden says locals built this park, scavenging old skateboard rails and pieces of wood. There's no ski lift, just a well-worn path for hiking up.
It snows and everything else will melt, but the way it's positioned, it'll hold snow and you can drive right up to it. So that's the perfect spot.
To support this lifestyle, the ski bums work construction as ski instructors, bartenders, in short, all of the jobs that make up the backbone of a mountain resort economy. But wages for these jobs are often low or unpredictable, or the work is seasonal. Still, ski bums find ways to make it work. Snowboarder Joe Steckdab moved out here from California 8 years ago at the age of 18.
It's nothing glamorous flipping cheeseburgers, but the first 4 years I was out here, I would camp all summer long.
But life here is getting more expensive. This year, corporate behemoth Vail Resorts announced it would purchase Crested Butte and 2 mountains on the East Coast in a $74 million deal. Locals say they hope Vail has the money to make improvements to ski lifts and a long-awaited trail expansion. At the same time, they worry an influx of tourists will take all of the factors that make it hard to afford life here and shift them into overdrive.
you know, as a mountain town, we were significantly hit by the recession.
Frank Consella is a realtor for a firm called Signature Properties.
People were going to, you know, default on their second home before their first, of course.
But with the country's economic recovery, he says, the price of a lower-end condo here has almost doubled. The veil buy could make prices spike even more, but
we won't know for another 6, 12, 24 months. It'll be hard to say.
Not good news for ski bums like Josh Painter. When he's not snowboarding, he serves tamales and burritos at a cafe downtown.
Yeah, I mean, it's all pretty good.
He says he'll leave if he has to.
Like, there's got to be some small, undiscovered ski town in, like, Montana or something.
To make workers like Painter stay put in their resort, some are building employee housing and boosting the minimum wage. Vail just raised its minimum from $11 an hour to $12.25. Resorts are also sponsoring foreign workers on special visas, although that program has been cut back under the Trump administration. It's a conundrum that 31-year-old Katie Thomas worries about. Thomas says her parents were ski bums, and now so is she.
I was living in a city. I was dating a lawyer. I was looking at the prospect of marriage and children and a white picket fence, and I realized I didn't want that. I wanted to ski and work in the same day, and I wanted to be back in my mountains.
During the day, she works behind a desk at a construction firm and works nights at a rum distillery that sells craft cocktails and steaming bowls of fancy ramen. She worries that Crested Butte will go the way of Aspen or Telluride, with the elite living in town, she says, and the workers commuting an hour or more.
You know, one of the saddest things I do is I'll walk through town in April, and 90% of the houses are dark because they're second homeowners. And it's just like, man, if you had some locals living there.
The glitzy transition may bring jobs, she says, but also deep pangs of loss. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Derry Buscarin.
I'm Gemma Gaudette. You've been listening to Idaho Matters. Today, we've been focusing on the ski industry and how it's been affecting our region.